Welcome to this very special episode of We Are Libertarians. I'm your host, Chris Spangle. Joining us from South Bend, Indiana is Joe Ruiz. Joe, how are you?
Good. How you guys doing?
I'm doing pretty well. And live in Orlando, Florida, one from a bedroom and the other from a bathtub, we have Brett Bittner.
Hey, what's going on?
Not much. And Chloe and Agnos. Chloe, how are you?
Good, thank you. How's it going?
Pretty good. So you guys are down at the National Convention. How is the convention so far?
I'll let Chloe go first. I'd like to hear her her feedback before I jump in.
Well, for my first convention, I'd have to say that it's very eventful. There are a lot of people here, all of whom are very nice. Nice to see a lot of people that are liberty-minded that are all together in one spot. And I'd also like to say that I am very impressed with the amount of media that is covering the convention. I personally have seen ABC, MSNBC, NBC, C-SPAN, Reason TV was here. So it's nice to see that it's getting so much coverage.
Brett, that seems to be different than I've been to two conventions. I went to St. Louis in 2010 and then Nevada in Las Vegas in 2012. And I remember thinking in 2012 going, wow, this is a presidential year and Reason isn't really covering it. And they are the Libertarian Standard, and yet Reason is all over it, and not just Reason, the Libertarian news outlet, all the other news outlets. I mean, that's a huge difference from somebody, you know, I'm in Indianapolis, so it seems like a huge jump for us.
Yeah, well, this is my fourth national convention. I've been to numerous state conventions, probably too many to count, as a speaker or a presenter, and I've got to say that the energy level and the excitement from the attendees is probably on par with what I have seen at my experiences in D.C. at the International Students for Liberty Conference, some of the regional conferences that I've seen for Students for Liberty, the Yale conferences and events that I've attended. I've got to say that you and I have discussed previously the difference between the party and the movement when it comes to excitement and energy and engagement and just people generally being happy about what's going on. And I would have to say that this is on par with anything that has happened with SFL, YIL, anything that has been a broader movement type of event. The introduction, I think one of the things that's probably really helping is the voice and exit type art within the Liberty movement is coming out. A lot of that is thanks to John McAfee and Judd Weiss. I think the excitement that's happening with essentially having a sold-out convention, at least as close as we could, and I mean by sold-out, I mean every delegate seat that is possible to have someone in it has someone in it. There are probably 200 people that are attending that would probably kill somebody if it didn't violate the map to get their delegate ribbon so that they could vote because they are that excited. The campaigns are there. The vendors are there. It's absolutely amazing to see how many people are filling the exhibit hall right outside the convention floor. This is way different from what I saw 2 years ago in Columbus, way different from what I saw 4 years ago in Vegas, way different from what I saw 6 years ago in St. Louis, way different from what I saw and heard about in 2008 in Denver. And I think that the excitement and energy is something that is unparalleled at any Libertarian Party event I've ever been to and rivals a lot of the Libertarian movement events that I've been a part of.
Is it because of the environment or is it because of the contested presidential race or what do you attribute it to?
I think the contested presidential race has a lot to do with it. I think you're seeing very different visions from the leading candidates. You know, McAfee and Weiss are talking about letting life live. They're focusing on the beauty. They're focusing on what you can build. Governor Johnson is looking at a very practical, pragmatic, you know, a two-term governor from New Mexico. This is what is realistic and doable. You have Austin Peterson, who has his army of supporters that are here, and they're energetic and excited and partying and having a good time. You have Daryl Perry supporters who, you know, they're gonna follow him to the pits of hell. And, you know, they're ready to stand and fight with him. And then really, in all honesty, I'm kind of getting a bit of a Bednarik vibe from Mark Allen Feldman in the way that he has really changed in the way that he's messaging, and we're seeing a lot of interesting things that are coming out of him. I think he's probably the biggest gainer from the debate, but he's starting from a very low position, having just gotten enough tokens to be in the debate. But his debate performance tonight was spectacular. And I think it's a very interesting thing to see how many people are absolutely and positively excited. And of course, Vermin Supreme is here talking about free ponies and making sure we brush our teeth.
I heard that he lost his pink pony strap. Was it ever recovered?
I believe his pink pony sash was recovered. I believe it was briefly lost, but we did have an announcement that it was missing. Yes.
Yeah, I'm watching the coverage at WeAreLibertarians.com. We've had the live stream up on the front page, as well as all the video that I can find off of YouTube. If you're a delegate and you're posting video, I am trying to grab it and put it up on WeAreLibertarians.com. For those of us who are not in attendance at the convention, yes, dear leader, the president of all libertarians did not attend to the convention because it is the 100th running of the Indianapolis 500, and that is literally the only thing that my dad and I ever do together, so that takes precedent. Family over liberty, I'm sorry. But it does. The debate tonight, I thought, was the most, you know, it was very rousing 4 years ago in 2012 with Gary Johnson versus Lee Wrights. Lee, a longtime party member. Gary was a relative newcomer, but had been in the, you know, a member of the party for 20 some years. And, you know, it was never really a contest. And I think Gary Johnson won with, what, 80% or something crazy like that?
I think he was in the low 70s, if I recall correctly.
Okay, yeah. But still, it wasn't anything like this year where you go into the convention. And before you guys left earlier this week, I don't think anybody knows what's going to happen tomorrow. I think we have a better idea that it's probably going to be Johnson. But Brett and Chloe, what are you guys hearing? I'll go to Brett first, and then Chloe, we'll see if you have some cleanup there as to what you guys are hearing in terms of who is going to win the presidential race tomorrow for the Libertarian Party.
What I'm seeing is that Gary is probably in the 48 to 52% range on the first ballot. I'm saying that because he's right on the cusp of winning it straight ahead.
And
that was probably before the debate. Obviously, I haven't had an opportunity to talk to many people after because I rushed up here to make sure that I was going to be able to do this with you guys. But when it came to the debate, McAfee kind of continued his debate performance in the debate that I moderated earlier this week, where it was very odd. I realize that this is all a big facade. You know, I'm just trying to pull back the curtain on the Wizard of Oz kind of a campaign, or at least debate style that he's had recently. And I think, like I said, the biggest winner tonight was probably Mark Allen Feldman from where he's coming from to where he may get. I think the unorthodox style in which he is campaigning is helping him. The rapping is helping. The humor is helping. The victory lap that he made around the convention floor when he got the 11th token that he needed, he was at like 78 tokens and he needed 88 or 89. He made a victory lap around the room, giving high fives like this was, he was on his way down to see Drew Carey on The Price is Right, or that he was going to be going to play LeBron James in his hometown of Cleveland on the basketball court one-on-one, and it was the biggest thrill of his life. I think Peterson did exactly what he's been doing all along. One-liners. He's got the bumper sticker stuff. He's got his folks trained to clap what they need to clap, and he had his quick, pithy answers that kind of get to the real point. And tonight, what I saw was that Perry was in the same thing that he's been doing, but he really, 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 really got emotional and excited, and you know, very passionate. We saw in the very closing for Mark Allen Feldman, it was absolutely ridiculous in how passionate and exciting he got a standing ovation for his closing. Gary Johnson got a very strong close to standing ovation, at least from his supporters.
And
when I took around to the debate, I would say that a majority of the signs I saw were Gary. But I saw about a 20 or so percent of people that have not committed to somebody, and I'm among them in terms of their supporting publicly. And so that's kind of where I am and how I see the five that are they're in the race as of right now that were in the debate tonight and the things that I'm hearing from delegates. I think the Weld thing has hurt Gary. I think it continues to hurt Gary. The top story today on Politico was about, you know, the Libertarian Dream ticket going down because Weld was such a disappointment in some of the, at least to the people here, and some of the things that he was saying and some of the things that were happening surrounding the convention. There were a couple of times tonight that Gary was booed for answers that he gave that were probably not the strictest libertarian answer, but they would be great in the general election.
Yeah, and hey, Brett, you might call us back and reconnect. Your cell is a little bit weak while we talk to Chloe. Chloe, how are you?
Yes.
So
I'm doing very well. How are you?
This was your first Libertarian Party presidential debate. I assume it's probably your first presidential debate that you ever attended. What were your impressions of the debate?
Well, I'm not sure how much you got of Brett's content, and I agreed with pretty much everything that he said, and I don't want to piggyback too much. But I will say that Mark Feldman really kind of knocked it out of the park. I was there from the beginning and stayed up until just about the very end because I needed to put my weave on to get ready for karaoke. But he just spoke with a lot of conviction and with a lot of passion. I think the rapping that he does goes over really well along with the humor. Gary Johnson did get booed a couple of times, but kind of like what Brett said, the majority of the signs that were in that hall were for Gary. Austin Peterson has supporters that are very well trained to clap and to cheer and to do whatever they need to do to make him look and sound good after he speaks. John McAfee, very philosophical, I thought, while he was speaking. You can tell he's just very intelligent by the way that he speaks. And then Darrell W. Perry, kind of the same way. He got a lot more passionate, I think, as we went on. But I will say the one thing from my scumbag Republican viewpoint, I feel like Austin Peterson is running or at least is communicating a campaign that would run over really well in the general. And I in his booth, and I'll give some context here, his booth is right across from ours. So I've been around him and his people the whole time that I've been here. And I really feel like he is communicating to delegates as if this is a general, that he is the answer to Clinton and to Trump. But my big thing is, you know, this is a convention race. This isn't a primary and this isn't a general, and you have to run it in order to appease the delegates, you know. And I feel like there are some delegates that I've come into contact with that are very much purists, that are very, I think they're probably a part of the Radical Caucus. And they're just really, really libertarian. And I don't know. I'm not sure exactly how it's going to go, but it seems that Gary Johnson's definitely the front runner.
Yeah, I think, and Joe and I will give our perspective from outside here in a few, because we know we've got to let you two go in 10 minutes. So I want to make sure that we get as much perspective from you guys being there as possible. So when you say that the rapping and the humor of Mark Feldman, I mean, from a viewer's perspective, I know Joe and I talked about it, and his wife kind of said this, it's like, why is anybody up there other than Johnson and maybe Austin Peterson? Everybody else just kind of seems like they're not that serious. So it just is, it's one of the, libertarians sometimes have a total disconnect from what the voter actually wants, and to me, somebody who is running around and Price is writing it around the convention floor and rapping, that to me is the opposite of what your average voter would find presidential.
Right, but I think that at least from what I've seen, I don't feel like libertarians are your average voter. I think they are a lot more intelligent. I think they are a lot more involved, a lot more passionate, and they want to see the human side of these people. They want to be able to relate to whoever their candidate is. It's kind of like how, you know, in New Hampshire, whenever you talk about the D's and R's, the people in New Hampshire want to meet whoever the Democratic or the Republican nominee is at least 10, 15 times before they vote for them. That's just how New Hampshire is with their primary. And I kind of feel like this is how it is for libertarians. They want to get the selfies. They want to have the conversations. They want to get to know this person beyond the platform.
Hey, Joe, you might hit mute on your phone. Yeah, I totally identify with that. I definitely think that that is the case. From an outsider's perspective, somebody who is not there in the hall, and I felt this way the entire time, it seems as if Gary Johnson, the bar has been so set so much higher for him. You know, as I watched Chloe Facebook Live'd the debate for us tonight, and we were watching and some of the comments come in from people, and there was one particular answer about World War I and should we have intervened, and everybody said, I don't know, and Gary Johnson just very plainly said, I don't know. And one commenter was like, well, you know, that was such a terrible answer. Everybody else gave it. I'm like, no, he said exactly the same thing. He just said three words instead of 400 words in a wall of text.
You know what my wife asked, Chris?
Yeah.
When they were going through that round of questioning, she said, why are they asking them these questions when they should be asking them the kind of questions that they're going to hear in a general election? Questions that'll set them apart from Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, I totally agree. I thought the questions and the moderating was very poor. But my point is that I think that there is a bar that Gary Johnson has to hit that is not other candidates certainly do not have to reach it. It seems as if libertarians are just not willing to give any kind of break. In fact, they're looking for any reason to, and it was this way in 2012, any reason to call Gary Johnson, you know, he's not a libertarian or he's a Republican light or any of this other bull stuff. I mean, is that Bob Barr hangover? Is that even accurate in your eyes? Are you guys seeing that there at the convention hall that there is sort of an anti, it's like, okay, I guess he's the guy, but I'll hold my nose type of attitude out of delegates?
Well, what I've seen on the convention floor, because I've spent more time in the convention hall than Chloe has, as we went from the harder core folks that were here when we started business first thing Friday morning, the people that were here Thursday night for the unofficial debate that I moderated or that I was on the panel for, as those people have kind of been diluted with the folks that were coming here to vote tomorrow for the nomination. We nominated this afternoon. We had seven nominees. We got to the, or I think, oh, sorry, six nominees. Are people that did receive a nomination. They were nominated from the floor, got the nomination tokens that they needed, the five in the debate. The energy is definitely changing. At the very beginning, it was very much what you described, Chris, where it was, look, I've just got to find a reason to, you know, to not support Johnson, to support somebody else, and maybe I'll come around to them on the third or fourth ballot. That you're seeing an influx of people now who are coming in that are, you know, carrying around the Johnson for the win and Weld for the win signs that the campaign has put out. One side is Johnson for the win, and I think the other side says Johnson build the party. We saw Peterson with his folks getting their rally signs up and out. Perry's got his folks that have their rally signs. Not really that kind of excitement about Mark. McAfee has his McAfee Weiss signs, but nothing really super exciting that's happening from his supporters. But tonight's format, I thought, went very well or lent itself very well to Austin Peterson's debate style. They had 30 seconds to answer these questions tonight. And I thought they had a wide variety of questions, which I thought was very interesting for a two-hour debate with five candidates. Everybody got plenty of time on the mic. It also did very well for Mark Allen Feldman, as he was he was being humorous. He was being funny. He had one-liners. He was really connecting with people that were there. And you know as well as I do, when you see the difference between a debate on television or a debate on a live stream, or however people may have watched it that weren't here, the vibe in the room can be totally different and cannot be seen in the way that it is. You know, you don't see that same vibe through television or a live stream that you do in person. There's an energy, there's a buzz that's going on. But we also broke from business early today. We actually ended 45 minutes early when we took a recess and came into the debate at 8 o'clock. So people had a lot more time to loosen up. They went to dinner. They had drinks. You know, it's not like in 2012 where we basically ran business right up until the presidential debate in 2012 between Lee Wright and Gary Johnson. So there was a lot more time to kind of have a couple drinks and be a little looser and be a little more excited. I saw a lot more energy and enthusiasm, the applause, the cheering, way more than we see in any sort of other debate that I've been a party to or had the opportunity to attend. I'm very glad that I did not skip the debate. That was one of the things I did consider doing tonight. I'm glad that Chloe and I were able to go. We were able to see what was going on, and I'm glad that I kind of prodded you into doing this Talking Dead kind of review of what just happened, at least from my perspective and from Chloe's perspective, and also pair that with what you and Joe saw through television and live stream.
Yeah, thanks for doing it. I think this will be great for the average listener who's not there, or even those who are there, to get a different perspective from someone. And hey, if you're down there and if you see Chloe or Brett of the Advocates, please say hi. Stop by the Advocates booth, say hi to Chloe. And if you're in Orlando, I guess you can go to Walt Disney World and see Greg. I think he's actually back now. He said that he couldn't join this phone call because he's going to a race party, which got Joe nervous. But
no, he said a race
me nervous
cookout.
Too.
He said a race
right,
cookout
because I asked him
which party.
Right, I asked him which race they were going to be cooking, and he said Polynesian, and I got very upset because I was worried that he might have gotten a hold of my sister somehow on his way back to Indiana.
Well, tomorrow's the Indy 500, the 100th running, so it's basically a huge party atmosphere. I got sun poisoning yesterday out at Carb Day. I was not drinking. I was just having a good time, though. It's much like a Libertarian convention, you know, concerts and drinking and Star Child. Chloe, did you get a chance to meet Star Child yet?
Oh, yes, a couple times.
Starchild.
She got to know him very well.
Ooh. Starchild is...
Yeah.
We posted a video on We Are Libertarians' Facebook page on May the 27th. May the 28th, today, of Starchild. Somebody, Now This News, I think it was, interviewed her. Newsy. It was Newsy interviewed her. Or him. I'm sorry, him. Not. I'm thinking of Chloe. Thinking of Chloe for some reason. Yeah, Starchild's a longtime figure in the LP and a very, very bright person. The Wild Outfits and the career as a how does he identify his career, Brett?
He is an erotic intimate.
An erotic intimate, and so sometimes it's easy to dismiss Starchild.
He's a Lady Gaga of Liberty.
Yeah, it's easy, but very intelligent person.
He's very kind.
Let's finish up with you and you two. Let's finish up with you, Brett, about the Weld thing, because, again, it goes back to the bar being so high. You know, McAfee has Weiss, Judd Weiss. In 2012, he picked Judge Gray going into the convention. You know, it's not uncommon for a presidential candidate to pick their running mate and suggest to the convention that this is their pick. Weld, obviously not somebody who was well-known inside libertarian circles beforehand, but I think Gary Johnson was making a pick to try and win an election and not to win a convention. And to me, looking at it, it seems like there's a little bit of ego on the part of the Libertarian Party delegates that is being offended. And, you know, if he wants Weld as a part of his campaign strategy, to me, there is no real downside in the election. There's only upside. Why wouldn't delegates give him his pick in that essential piece of campaign strategy?
Well, I think that what we're looking at when it comes to the nomination is the spectrum of libertarians that goes from perceived electoral viability to ideological purity. And you've got to find which of these five people that were on the stage tonight actually meet where you are on that spectrum closest, or at least where you meet them on that spectrum in 2016. And I think what the Weld running mate pick, just taking a look back at 2012, when Judge Gray, who is a known quantity to the LP, having served as a candidate several times in California, he's somebody that we've had at convention after convention after convention. He's not the unknown, at least to libertarians. We've all met Judge Gray. Well, we've not. He's not been around. He's not been a candidate for us. And we saw that even though Gary was in the lower to mid 70s in Vegas, Judge Gray was probably in the upper 50s to lower 60s when it came to the popular vote totals during the nomination. And if you see that same kind of a drop off because Gary is so close to that, I still think he's probably in right at the 50% line. Maybe he goes to a second ballot and picks up enough from whoever drops to get the 50% plus one that he needs to secure the nomination. When you apply that same kind of a math and the drop off from Gary to Judge Grady in 2012 to Gary to Governor Weld here in 2016, you're then looking at about a 35-38% on the first ballot, and I don't know if people break for Weld after that. I think he has a ceiling. Having said that, I can take a look at the strong candidates that are happening, the winner of the vice presidential debate last night, from everybody that I have talked to, was Larry Sharp. Most people have no idea.
Yeah, you dropped off there for a second, and I watched the vice presidential debate, and we've lost Brett. Yeah, Larry Sharp was very impressive in that debate, but I would counter to Brett if he were here that, listen, I don't know Larry Sharp or Alicia Dern or Will Coley, who I thought was, I mean, really, when you compare Will Coley and William Weld, it's just like it's amateur hour with Will Coley. But that is the beauty of the Libertarian Party. It's people who have no business being on stage with people who have served in other parties. But, you know, to me, it just doesn't seem there. Brett talked about picking the candidate that is closest to your purity, but this is also politics. You do have to have some pragmatism and say, William Weld has been able to get on several different news shows and get media attention, and he is close enough to libertarian beliefs. And this is about winning percentage. This is about winning votes. And what vice presidential candidate is going to aid our nominee, and what vice presidential candidate is going to get us more votes and more media attention? So why wouldn't we pick William Weld? Chloe, what are you hearing on the William Weld or the vice presidential race in general?
I'm sorry, did you guys lose Brett?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, because he's still talking to himself. But I can reiterate. Yeah, Brett Bittner talking at his own pace. I can reiterate a little bit of what he's been saying. He said that Gary Johnson's going to be getting, or do you want to, Brett, do you want to come over here and talk on my phone? Come talk on my phone. Here's little Brett Bittner.
Okay, thanks.
All right, so where did you guys leave me?
Not too long ago, probably 30 seconds ago.
Okay, so I think Gary Johnson wins on first or second ballot. He's going to be getting my vote. Taking a look at Larry Sharp, he's probably going to get my VP vote. Larry and I have been friends for about 2 years. I think he's really going to add a lot to the ticket. I think he's going to be somebody that can kind of pick up as candidates drop out. He's going to be able to pick up and surpass Weld as we look at the drop off from Judge Gray to, or from Gary to Judge Gray in 2012. You apply that same kind of math. I think Weld is below 40% and never gets above that threshold.
Okay, but here's my point: is there's really, I don't know Larry Sharp. I did think he'd had a good debate performance. I don't know Will Coley. I thought he was a joke. And I liked Alicia Dern fine enough, but nobody knows those three either, and none of those three were getting media attention this past week. And
sure.
Gary Johnson says that William Weld is an essential piece of his campaign, so if there's really no downside, why would you vote against his pick if you're going to vote for his candidacy? What's the thinking there?
Well, for me, there are just a lot of things that hurt Weld as a VP pick in my mind. And some of them are philosophical. Some of them are political. And I'm looking at the math, and I don't see him necessarily overcoming that kind of stuff. I think that Larry is a fantastic communicator. I think he does a great job in balancing Gary's very practical, matter of fact, this is what we can do, kind of thing, with a very, look, this is where we are. We're not just going to be talking to your minds. We need to be talking to your hearts. And I think that's something that Larry brings to a potential ticket. I was underwhelmed in the debate, the vice presidential debate that I was on the panel for with Governor Weld. The room was definitely underwhelmed. Now, that was before we convened for business yesterday, so you had probably the little more hardcore members of the party that were already here and already kind of taking their shots. He was heckled a bit from members of the audience. But I think that, you know, there's not a lot of difference. When you look at optics, when you look at aesthetic, when you look at the way that people are going to be viewing the ticket, you do have to appeal to different dynamics. And I don't know that the two former Republican governors who are old and white are necessarily going to be appealing to the general election audience in the same way. At the top of the ticket, you're always looking at the president. The vice president might pick up some of the things. We saw that with John McCain when he went as an old white guy picking a younger female former governor. He's looking at the optics of it. He saw that he was weak with women. He saw he was weak with younger people, and he tried to do what he could based on the pool of people available to help fill that. And I think that's one of the things I see that Larry helps with, because it's not just about talking about the issues from changing minds. Larry also wants to reach out and talk to people about changing hearts.
I got a vibe from Larry that he does understand libertarianism and does speak well on a libertarian level, but I found William Weld to be incredibly well informed, very educated, very experienced.
Oh, absolutely.
And when I look at their strategy and I think, okay, they're going for they're trying to undermine the recklessness and uninformed position of Donald Trump. They're trying to show that libertarians are actually intelligent and experienced and attractive to two former Republican governors, that they're the grown-ups in the room. And I as a delegate, I would not vote against Governor Johnson's strategy. I just don't. I get that there are problems with Weld's philosophy, and that maybe some things that he did in the 90s were not necessarily the most libertarian point of view. But that is part of the Johnson candidacy. The Johnson candidacy is like, it's not like Daryl Perry, which is, here's where we want to go, a destination libertarian. Gary Johnson's saying, okay, this is where we're at, and this is how we can make it more libertarian, even if it's not what we would like right out of the box, more of that directional libertarian approach. So I guess I would just disagree. I mean, it's not like I have a problem with Larry Sharp. I thought he was very, very impressive in that debate. I just don't, I don't get it.
I agree with you. And Brett, I don't think, in my opinion, I don't think that the Libertarian Party at this point necessarily needs to be like John McCain, grab the female vote by selecting a female candidate or choosing something based solely on diversity or some sort of strategic move like that, because we're already different. We're already unique in that we are a third party that's in the public eye kind of for the first time ever. So we're a natural underdog. We're going to be rock stars if we play it right. And I don't think that we need to do anything different. We can have two mature former governors on stage. Go along and trust Gary's pick. And I don't think that we need to make any sort of move from a strategic standpoint like that or play the game or do the dance just to appease a certain, you know, niche audience, because we are what we are, and that's different than what's already out there.
Do optics matter?
I never said anything about Larry reaching a different demographic. I'm saying he has a different style of messaging.
Sure.
Gary is very practical.
And I don't know. I didn't see the VP debate, and I'm not familiar with Larry Sharp. So am I understanding that he's not an old white governor?
Oh, no.
He is definitely not an old white governor.
I don't know. I don't know what he looks like.
In the way that they message. Gary is very much going after the minds, and what I'm seeing from Larry Sharp is that he's going after the hearts. And we all know that you don't make change by legislating. You go by changing hearts and minds. Well, we've tried changing minds. If you can add a little bit of changing hearts to that, I think that's the diversity that I'm talking about on the ticket. In the way that I see how this is progressing.
Yeah, I gotcha. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. All right, Brett.
Larry is black, but that didn't matter to me.
It doesn't matter to me either. I just didn't know.
I wasn't gonna guess, but yeah, he was definitely not an old white governor. Brett, thank you for joining us. Don't hang up. I want to get Chloe's impressions just a little bit more. But thank you for giving us your time and.
Oh, well, I'm going to kick her out of my bathroom.
All right. Chloe and
Hi,
Agnes,
Spangle.
How are you doing? Are you enjoying your first Libertarian convention?
Oh, it's going so well. Speaking of which, I'm going to be on deck soon to go sing.
Okay.
The wonderful people at the Libertarian Party of Texas have invited me to their karaoke party, and apparently I am going to be one of the ringers in order to help the shy people not be so shy.
What are you going to sing?
Probably something by Miranda Lambert.
Oh.
Haven't figured that out yet. Depends on what they've got.
Well, good. Well, listen, you go sing. We appreciate your time. But when you
anytime.
When you and Brett get back, we'll have an episode. We'll talk to you and Brett about the convention and Greg about Orlando.
Oh, yeah, because I've got more things I need to tell you guys about the convention, but I got to do it in person.
Okay, cool. Yeah, and we want to...
Can you give us a few bars of kerosene? Before you leave?
I'm sorry?
But can you give us a few bars of kerosene before you leave? Miranda Lambert?
Kerosene?
That's one of her songs. Don't be shy. It's not your job.
No, I'm shy. I'll do it in person. You got to get some sangria in me first.
Yeah. All right, Chloe. Thank you very much for joining us.
Anytime. Talk to you guys later.
All right,
bye-bye.
Bye. Well, Joe Ruiz, what were your thoughts on tonight's presidential debate?
I have so many thoughts that I don't even know if I'm going to be able to hit on each bullet point because I didn't write anything down in advance. But let me just go down the stage, if you will. John McAfee, he comes across as very odd. He comes across as very professorial. I think Chloe uses the word philosophical. And I think that that's true for John McAfee.
Did it not seem like he was like old and sick almost?
He creeped my wife out quite a bit. And I always use her as the barometer for what normal people think because
right.
she's not as politically engaged as we are.
Right.
So, you know, John McAfee has a lot to offer. And I know like people like Harry Price are, you know, big fans and he's got his audience. But I just don't think that would translate to a general election at all. And I think both the media and normal voters would kind of eat them alive. And Brett saying, you know, people need to have their hearts touched as well as their minds. I don't think John McAfee would touch people's hearts at all. I think if anything, he would buzz that creeper button that's on everybody's radar. I don't think he has very much to offer in a general election.
I'll tell you what, though. He does appeal to me in his talk of revolutionary action. And that he flees the government, and but yeah, there's also this weird confrontational thing where he's like, I'm just gonna pull back the curtain on the process of the Libertarian Party, and I'm not gonna play by your rules. And in his nomination speech, he just stood up there and was like, well, I know that I can't be president, and you know I can't be president. I'm just like, ooh, that's a bold move, Cotton, saying that you can't win.
How it works for him.
There's just he reeks of first time candidate, and you've been around the party for a long time. And I had so many candidates when I was the executive director of Indiana say, I'm going to do this thing differently, and I'm going to be outrageous, and I'm going to get attention, and I'm going to wear Hawaiian shirts to the debates, and it just doesn't... People in the Libertarian Party...
Yeah, or dress as Patrick Henry.
Yeah, like...
As you saw in 2012.
Yeah, they just aren't attracted to that. What they're attracted to is, I think, more of the Gary Johnson or the Austin Peterson, where, you know, Gary Johnson is a very serious, thoughtful, nice man who wants to make a difference, admits that he's not, you know, he's just very genuine. And I'm not saying that John McAfee's not genuine. I think he is genuine. I just think his genuine is not what I'm looking for in a presidential candidate. And I think that's why he pulled less tokens. So long story short, tokens, every delegate gets a token. You put a token in a bucket for your candidate. If you get above 30, you can be nominated. If you get it above, I think it's like 80, then you can get in the televised presidential debate. And John McAfee got, so it's sort of like an informal straw poll, but Perry got more tokens than McAfee, you know. So it is interesting that he ended up not getting into like the Fox News debate, but yeah, McAfee to me just is that same. It's the same problem that I have with Trump. There's just a little bit of I just feel like he's unhinged a little bit, and I know people like our friend Rob Kendall and Greg. They love that unhinged leaking to the USSR that Nixon has Alzheimer's type of thing, but that's not what I'm looking for. I just don't want crazy next to the nuclear codes.
There's that part of his messaging, you know, how he presents himself to the public. But when he speaks about libertarian ideas, to me, he comes across as very pandery. He comes across as someone who's read a lot of A to Z libertarian books about what libertarianism is, and he's just regurgitating that to a libertarian audience. And I've heard all of those things so many times that all I can think in my head is nobody really cares outside of this libertarian room. You know, if you go on MSNBC and you talk about any of those things, intellectual property or whatever, like while those ideas, while there's something to them that I think people should invest time in and learn about, I just don't think that most people care. And he would really, really struggle with, you know, quote, normal people.
Yeah, people don't want you pushing basic ideology on them. And this is the mistake that a lot of libertarians make, is they think that if they can get the stage and they can run a candidacy to educate and not to win or not to, you know, because that's what he's doing. He's running a campaign to educate people about the basics of libertarianism because he's assuming that most people haven't heard it, which he's probably right. But that's not what people want. People want a serious candidate. And Greg, and this is really something that all of us at We Are Libertarians believe. It's like if you talk about issues and you talk about current events and you give solutions, you identify the problem, give the solution from a libertarian point of view, people are going to be more attracted to that than if you just launch a podcast talking about the basics of libertarianism. Because people don't want the basics of libertarianism. They want to know how to fix the problem before them.
And I'll take it to OG We Are Libertarians from back in the day. You used to make a point pretty often that the Libertarian Party needs less professors and more marketers.
Right.
We need to think with our marketing hats on. And that's not what John McAfee does best. That's what guys like Austin Peterson and Gary Johnson do best.
Yeah, so let's move on to Daryl Perry. I keep wanting to say William Perry because that's a guy I used to work with. But Daryl Perry, Daryl is a great guy. I've known him forever. Everybody in that room probably knows Daryl. He's a longtime Libertarian Party person. You know, for all the talk of Austin being the longest member of the Libertarian Party, that's probably not true. It's got to be Daryl Perry. He's just been around forever, part of the New Hampshire crowd. Very purist. I found a lot of his answers just to be no. And, you know, he's just very much the purist candidate. And here's the problem that I have with Perry. Philosophically, I agree with him more than I agree with any other candidate on the stage. But when you're in politics, you can't be absolutely pure. You can't be, it's just not a philosophy club. It's about winning elections and moving the ball forward to try and claw back what has been built and appealing to your average voter. And that's a far different thing than appealing to a person's purity. So when I look at Daryl, I see a candidate that I agree an awful lot with on the philosophy side, but in terms of politically, you know, not being able to build much of an operation, not being someone that can answer beyond no, I just don't see his candidacy working in the general election for the Libertarian Party.
Yeah, I think that Daryl Perry is, and like you, I agree with him on most things. But I think overall, at least from a perception standpoint, he would be like a nightmare to traditional voters, you know, because he's saying, I'm going to take everything away from you that you've ever been given. And they're not going to have enough time intellectually to catch up with the why. And I think that would be a huge problem. He's like, his faults are John McAfee's faults in a way, at least from an intellectual perspective, but they're worse. They're like tenfold. So I think that he was the worst. And while I agree with him on some things, here's my problem. I wish he hadn't been there, because at the end of the day, libertarian people are getting more attention than they've ever gotten. I watched it on C-SPAN tonight, and a lot of first time people probably tuned in because they wanted to see what the candidates were all about. And having someone on stage like him to a person who has little to no foundation in libertarian thought could have been scared away by that level of crazy.
I wouldn't call it crazy. I would call it anarchy.
No. And here's the thing. Again, yes, I agree. But I'm talking about the person who has no libertarian foundation is going to look at that and say, that's crazy. Because they don't understand the depth that goes into the thought behind it.
Right.
Okay. They don't understand his rationale. They're getting it at face value. And to a normal person, he's going to seem crazy.
Yeah. And I get you. I think, yeah, there is definitely people go into it. Non-libertarians go into watching something like that thinking that we're tinfoilers.
Oh, yeah.
So.
And that's the same thing with, you know, when we get to Mark Feldman. Like, he seemed to me, as someone who's familiar with the party, who's been around, who understands kind of the way of things, he's, and I don't mean to skip over the other guys, but he seemed cute and funny and friendly and unique and adorable and all these things, you know, really excited and really eccentric. And I liked him. Like, I genuinely liked him. I just think that for the person who comes in and all they've been told their entire lives are these things about how libertarians are these crazy, quirky, tinfoilers, or they're eccentric or whatever, they're going to see that and go, people were pretty much right.
Yeah. I found Mark Feldman to be not serious. I never have thought he was serious. He seems like he is a, there's always in every election, there's always somebody that runs, excuse me, that, you know, there's candidates, there's party builders, and there are campaign managers.
Yeah.
And, you know, your party builder is somebody who is in it for the long haul to build the party, to make sure that the party's interests are safe. You know, if you saw some of the debates, you saw Jim Lark, you saw Bill Redpath on stage, those guys are party builders. You know, they may run for office, but they're running for office to give people, to keep the Libertarian Party flame alive. And to me, Mark Allen Feldman is one of those party builder guys. And this is not the cycle for party builders. We're now at a point where you can't have party builders running for office in the Libertarian Party. You know, we don't have any campaign managers. Like, Evan McMahon's the only one. Mm-hmm. You know, the guy who's going to stay up till 4 a.m. screaming at everybody to make sure the ball's moved forward, you know, punishing themselves and everyone around them to make sure that we win, knows the ins and outs of politics because they've been paid to do it for so long. We just don't have a lot of those guys because there's no money in the Libertarian Party. And then there are the candidates, the guys who, you know, they're party builders to some extent, but at the end of the day, they're issue-oriented, they're a little bit narcissistic, they're focused on winning, they're interested in being a part of the team for a short period of time, and then they get back to being successful at other ventures, and then they come back and do it again, and, you know, on and on.
I agree with you 100%, Chris, about the party unifier. That's something that they're talking about a lot with Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. Will they be able to unify the party? If you looked at his closing statement tonight, Mark Feldman was able to unify the party. He mentioned in a very impassioned closing speech every candidate that was on the stage with him, and he didn't say a thing wrong. He said something positive about each of them, something that characterized their campaign and who they are as a person and what everybody loves about them. And he did that in a way that makes you think if this guy would stick around and be a part of these campaigns, he would have a lot to offer. But he can't be president. He can't be the nominee.
Yeah.
Because he won't be effective.
Right. Anytime a candidate mentions that the party that he, the body that he is standing in front of are his family, then he's a party builder. I mean, that's just not, you know, and libertarians are full of party builders. And so they love when they see another party builder and they're turned off by candidates. And that's just, you know, we've got to grow up. And when you look at McAfee or when you look at Johnson and Peterson, you see two candidates. They are not party builders. They're guys who have been around the party. Gary Johnson obviously did a lot for the party in 2012 and has maintained, you know, visiting conventions. Excuse me.
You are a sleepy guy. That party really took it out of you.
And, you know, Peterson has not been around the party since he worked for them, but he's been off doing other things and being successful elsewhere. But that does, you know, but he's not been attending board meetings for the LNC. And that's, but that's not what their strengths are.
But he's been working toward the progression of, you know, libertarian ideals and the message, working for Judge Napolitano, working for Freedom Works. You know, he's been moving everything forward despite not being, you know, right there at the LNC meetings per se.
Right. So we come down to Johnson and Peterson. And to be really honest, I was very pro Johnson. Until we interviewed
just
him.
Like your personal life. Yes. I guess.
Until we got to I've been staring at hours and hours of Johnson on today. If you go to WeAreLibertarians.com, you can get the raw audio politics feed, or you can get the Gary Johnson for President feed. And last Saturday and today, I uploaded dozens of interviews to both of those feeds. Get the raw audio politics feed, and you can get all of them in one. Search for it in iTunes, anywhere else. Just making sure that, you know, I'm an audible learner. I like to clean my house while listening to podcasts, and I don't get time to sit down and watch these interviews or debates, so I collect them for us. So check that out. Another service of We Are Libertarians. And there's just so much more Gary Johnson. If you go back and look in that feed, there are all the there's all the stuff from 2012, and already before the convention, there's probably twice as many interviews with Gary Johnson as there were the entire 2012 cycle for Gary Johnson. You know, he is the guy that is getting a lot of the media attention. And, you know, I voted for him in 2012, and I, you know, was an enthusiastic supporter then. I did not think much of Austin Peterson until I sat down and talked with him and interviewed him and have started taking him seriously since the convention. And I would have gone to Orlando 50-50, to be quite honest. I would have waited until this weekend to make my decision, and just because I've been so impressed with Austin Peterson.
In a way, I'm still glad that I'm not a delegate and I don't have to make that decision.
Why?
Because, you know, while I see the PR benefits to a Johnson candidacy, and I think he's super pragmatic. I think they touch on different bases. I think that, you know, Austin Peterson is going to be your more Ron Paul crowd. His youth is going to take from maybe some Bernie supporters, but I think that's the only reason why you would take from some Bernie supporters. Otherwise, he's going to take from a lot of Glenn Beck supporters, Ted Cruz supporters, that kind of thing. So he's more the conservative wing, where Johnson, though he has the fiscal conservative record, and he's actually performed as an executive, I think his social policies and what he was booed for tonight with climate change is going to touch more from those left libertarians. And I think so they touch different audiences. And I probably nowadays identify more with the Ron Paul
school libertarian, which would be Austin Peterson. However, I know that Gary Johnson has a better chance to make a splash if he seizes that opportunity in the public eye. So I wouldn't know which way to go.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that they definitely appeal to two different crowds. I don't think a Bernie supporter would ever look at Austin and say, yeah, I could vote for that guy.
Unless, because here's the thing, is a lot of Ron Paul supporters are now Bernie Sanders supporters. And it's because they weren't sold on what Ron Paul discussed. They were they were sold on the cult of personality. They were sold on, you know, the Ron Paul culture. He was a rock star. Bernie Sanders, much in the same way, is a rock star. And he has this stadium audiences at his rallies. And there's something that appeals to normal people about Bernie Sanders that's not necessarily all of his ideas. Because how many people have you heard say, well, I know socialism is a bad thing, but Bernie is a really authentic guy. And that's why people love Bernie. That's why I like Bernie. But does that mean that his ideas are good for America? Probably not. And I think a lot of people were the same way with Ron Paul. They didn't necessarily understand everything that he said. Otherwise, they wouldn't be talking about Bernie Sanders at all. But they felt some sort of connection to him.
That was unique. Yeah, and that's why I think that Gary Johnson is going to have a better chance at appealing to both crowds, because a left-leaning person can stomach it. But even a Glenn Beck, I think if you were to give him a second shot, I think they might be out because Johnson's pro-choice.
Yeah, that's the thing, is I listen to Glenn, Pat, and Stu on almost a daily basis, and they were against Gary Johnson before they even let him on the show, you know, because they had already made up their mind based on him being pro-choice, based on his stance on gay marriage. They thought he was a cuckoo, and they gave him an opportunity to speak to them based on fair time, because what they were really trying to do is get to Austin Peterson, who Stu had told Glenn that he would like if he just gave this guy a listen. So he tried to do the right thing by giving the three top candidates in the party a position on his show for a day or a segment. But he knew all along, and they were dismissive of Johnson. They didn't like him right away, but they gave Austin Peterson a second segment because they liked him so much.
Yeah. Cool. Austin speaks in bumper stickers. He's often criticized for it. I just don't know how the media would take him seriously given his age. And, you know, Greg loves to say, oh, well, it just seems like Gary Johnson saying things to suck up to the media elite. I'm like, and yet you think Trump is like a viable option? Like, that's such a disconnect.
Yeah.
I think that Gary, because of his biography, has a better shot of getting media attention, which then gets him the 15% to get in the debates, which then gets him at least the public financing at 5%, if not damn near a win of the presidency now. And I just don't see that Peterson... See, I want to count him out, and I want to say, no, he wouldn't be able to do that, but, you know, he has been underestimated at every stage, and he probably could, you know, but...
I think there's some power in Austin's age, because he's so articulate.
Yeah.
And I think that he articulates his message so well that if he's able to sit down in front of a Glenn Beck, who's very judgmental, who's very cranky old man these days, and sell him on it, and then turn Glenn Beck into a messenger down the road of Austin Peterson, I think he can do that with a lot of people, especially with a lot of conservatives. And when you ask him about his age, he has this really good answer about some of our founders who are around his age at the founding of this country and at the time that the Constitution was put into place. He has a great answer for that. And I think that it could make him, like, you know, like Ron Paul, like Bernie Sanders, a bit of a cult of personality. And I think a lot of that youth vote would be happy to rush to the first millennial president. But the things that bother me about Peterson are, you know, not so much his age. The things that bother me about Peterson are that
while he articulates his message really well, like he was standing in front of a libertarian audience tonight, and instead of speaking in sound bites and bumper stickers, which he does so frequently, he could have given a little bit more explanation with the time that he had behind his ideas to see the depth and the value in them, especially knowing that we are on TV. And those sound bites and bumper stickers down the road in front of a general audience would be really good for rallies, stump speeches, interviews that are going to be brief on the major cable networks if he had that opportunity. But on a debate stage where a lot of people are watching, I don't think those sound bites and bumper stickers are sufficient. I think that you have to give a little bit more rationale and be able to articulate that rationale outside of 140 characters or less so that people know where you're coming from, because a lot of people aren't familiar with the Ron Paul, Austin Peterson culture.
Yeah, and all of them looked very tired. So, you know, it was not Austin's best debate performance. It was definitely not McAfee's best debate performance. Gary, I thought, had a decent enough, definitely better than the John Stossel debate. That was just, ooh. That was,
you know what's weird about Gary is I felt all the way up until tonight like his campaign has been lackluster.
Yeah.
I've wondered to myself, is something wrong with his health? Is he sick and he's not telling anybody? Does he just not want to run for president?
Is he taking it for granted that he's just the front runner and it's set up?
Or? He seemed tired and he seemed unenthused. And that's why Austin Peterson was so amazing, because he was a firebrand and Gary was just kind of stoned looking, you know. But tonight he showed that he was aware that there were cameras on him. He was aware that all those media outlets Chloe referred to being there for the first time were focused on him, and that there might be some sound bites on CNN in the morning. So, and he spoke in that way, which is why he even got a few boos from the Libertarian Party audience, because he wasn't answering in a way that was necessarily, I'm in a closed room with no cameras full of the Libertarian Party's delegates. There were people watching on a national and perhaps even global scale, and he knew that, and he was aware of it, and he was going to speak to the issues in a way that was good for a general electorate.
Honestly, if the Libertarian Party, if you're not getting booed, then you're doing something wrong. I mean... I am a member of the Libertarian Party, but I slowly move more and more away from being a partisan person every single interaction I have with libertarians, and I know that you're the same. I've just never seen a group of people, not in totality, but certain individuals that you just run into that just do not understand politics, how it works, how to present yourself to win, or even have a desire to win. I mean, for a political party, it's so non-political, which, you know, has its charm, and that is what attracts me to it, is that it is a diverse and irreverent crowd, somewhat cantankerous.
But you're right. The rule of thumb is probably, if you're looking at what makes an ideal general candidate, it's the opposite of what would sell in a room full of Libertarian Party.
Yeah. Thank you for saying exactly what I'm thinking. Because just like the discussion that we had earlier in this episode with Weld is going to actually appeal to voters. Weld is close enough on the Libertarian scale. He's in the quadrant. Same with Gary Johnson. And are they perfect libertarians? Are they Daryl Perry? Absolutely frickin' not. But we as Libertarian Party members have to decide that what is that balance? How far can you go on your, not on your principles, but on your purity scale? What can you, it's not even stomach, because there's nothing about Gary Johnson that I look at and I go,
the only thing I would say is that sometimes he's a little awkward and he needs to hold himself like more of a leader, you know, position himself as more of a power player so that he can stand up to the other two candidates that are going to be in this presidential race.
Right. And that's sort of like, he's so humble and such a nice guy. And I told the story before, but in 2012, right after he won the nomination, I think it was the Saturday night right before the banquet dinner, And he came into the back of the room where Sam Goldstein and I were sitting. And he said, look, is this seat taken? Can I sit here? And so he sat down with his fiance, and we had dinner with him. And Sam was just fit to be tied because he's like, why are you not sitting up front? Why are you sitting in the back with Chris Spangle and Sam Goldstein and not up at the dais? Why are you not being coronated? You know, and Gary was like, I don't need that. You know, I just want to do good for the party, and had a nice conversation with him. Just super humble. And that doesn't really work. You know, you want, like, for a guy like Greg is turned off by his humility almost.
He likes Trump's level of arrogance, you know, because he's confident in himself and he projects strength.
It's really
biggest thing.
Yeah, it's a faux masculinity where I just don't think that John Wayne view of masculinity exists. I think it never has existed. And I would much prefer that we amend the view of masculinity to be a guy like Gary Johnson. Quietly and humbly working hard to achieve the things that you want to achieve, you know, physically fit, emotionally fit, successful in business and everything that you do, but not being that, you know, he just doesn't have showmanship. And I think that is something that we here at We Are Libertarians struggle with, because we want to say, like, Gary, you're an effing badass, own it, and people need to see that you are excited to be a libertarian and you're excited. But, you know, he's just kind of got that North Dakotan affect, and he seems a little goofy. He's a little shy and nerdy, and, you know.
And that's where Peterson trumps him. I hate to use that word, but because he's spunky, and he's ready to fight, and he projects strength, even though it's kind of a youthful strength, you know. Like, next to Clinton and Trump, he'd be a bit of a puppy, but he's still eager.
Right.
You know, and that's much different than the way Gary carries himself.
Yeah. So
because you brought Gary's level of humility. In 2012, I came down to Indianapolis, and we picked Gary up from the airport, me and a couple of the other guys from the party, and we drove him around to do a small media tour. And during that time, we visited the ABC contractors down there, and he spoke with them. And afterwards, there was this long buffet line of things that were left over, and we were going to shuttle those over to the Libertarian Party of Indiana's state convention, where he was going to debate the other potential presidential candidates. And we were carrying things out from this building to the van to take them over. And Gary, who had just given this really great speech, and you know, it was one of his best that I'd heard, he began to shuttle donuts and carry coffee and carry coolers and stuff. And we were all like, hey, you don't have to do that. And he's like, oh, please. No. Like, I you know, I want to help you guys get this over there, and I'm no better than anybody else. And he just projected that humility. Like, I'm here to work alongside you and not have you work for me.
It's genuinely not an act. Absolutely great person.
Yeah. And when I ran in 2012 for Congress, he endorsed me. And the only reason I'm saying that is to tell you that I was a huge fanboy because of that reason, that, you know, he was giving endorsements to other Libertarian Party candidates. And when I found out that he was going to do that for me, even though I was just this first time candidate, a young libertarian who didn't know a ton, man, that made me feel so good. And I still hang my hat on that to this day. So it's hard for me to say negative things about Gary knowing that sometimes, but, you know, at the end of the day, there's pros and cons to Gary Johnson and Austin Peterson as the top two guys in my eyes. And Gary, he's not a perfect candidate, but I do think that he is probably the best this go around.
He even admitted in his nominating speech, he's like, listen, I wish I were a better candidate at some things. I wish that I just don't know everything. I'm not the perfect candidate. You know, and it's just amazing to see so many people try and hold him to perfection to the point of wanting to say F you and not give him William Weld and not, you know, boo him at these things. I mean, it's just, I just don't understand it. You know, it's
Libertarians are intellectual masochists sometimes. Yeah. We hate ourselves. And when I worked in youth corrections, there were things in therapy that kids were given called thinking error worksheets. Is when they would in their therapy speak out certain fallacies, they would have to do these worksheets and write down where their thinking went wrong. And there was a list of what they called thinking errors to guide them. And one of the thinking errors on those sheets was all or nothing thinking. And that's self-explanatory when I say it. And libertarians tend to be guilty of all or nothing thinking. And that's really problematic for us. And we need to get past it.
All right. Anything else that you want to say?
Yes, I wanted to talk about Weld real fast before we closed up. I didn't know much about Weld at all, and I've been trying to kind of catch up. And I listened to Jason Stapleton's podcast he did on Thursday, where he just pretty much bashed Weld the entire time. And that wasn't extremely helpful as far as getting any positives. And then I saw a CNN interview that he did yesterday with Gary Johnson, where he basically talked about he talked about how he admires Trump for what he's been able to do. And he talked about how he's probably more closely friends with the Clintons. And I thought these things were bad political moves. As far as like the libertarian inside of me, the all or nothing thinking libertarian inside of me that doesn't like when you're friends with the establishment and that you could, you know, pucker up to the established or the status quo at any point. That bothered me a lot to hear it. But then when you think about it, to the general person, for him to be able to work across the aisle with Republicans and Democrats, it's probably going to be a good thing. And sometimes a compliment might be necessary. Here's my thing about Weld. If Johnson, as a candidate who I think is the best among his competition in 2016, thinks that his foot is best put forward with Weld as his vice president, I think we have to trust our candidate, and we can't take that away from him. Because it's like those... you know, I liken it to like the X Factor, that singing TV show where sometimes two people would audition together and they would say, we like you, but we don't like you. And they would pull someone out of the competition and they would keep somebody. And then later on, they would say, we don't like you by yourself. And we'd take that same person and we'd stuff them in a group full of four strangers and say, now we would like you to act as a group. Well, if you don't know the people that you're participating with and you don't have a rapport and you can't work in trust, how are you supposed to go out and publicly present yourself in the best way possible, you know, as you would with all of those bugs worked out? Gary obviously has a reason why he wants this guy, and it could have to do with Coke money. It, you know, there's an article that's out there saying that with a Johnson Weld ticket, there would be millions of dollars from the Kochs to start their campaign, which would be huge, in my opinion, for any libertarian candidate to have access to that kind of money, because money is something that we struggle with. But at the end of the day, don't cripple a guy's campaign on day one. If you want, in this moment where all of a sudden people are paying attention to libertarian candidates for the first time, and you want your party to be represented well, and you want to go out and you want to make as big an impact as you can to potentially get on the debate stage with Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, give the man what he feels like he needs to make the biggest splash possible. And if that's Bill Weld, damn it, give him Bill Weld.
Yeah, I would largely agree. I mean, it's, would I vote for Bill Weld as president, as our presidential candidate? I don't think so.
No,
based on what I've read, but in the vice presidential slot, where it really doesn't matter to me all that much, But
The other thing is, you and I had a conversation the other day, and I'll tell the listeners, where we said the vice presidential spot as a whole is largely an irrelevant post. It's very public relations related, and granted, if you look at Biden, they find things for them to do. But their hands are tied in regards to the power that they have and the decisions that they can make, because they are the middleman between the president and Congress. And John Adams felt a lot of frustration when he was George Washington's second, because he had a lot of opinions about the way that things needed to be done, and he had no method of recourse as far as getting those things addressed other than talking to people and sharing his opinion. But if everybody disagreed, he was just this guy who had to bite his tongue. And the vice presidency, in a lot of ways, is exactly that. It's the second string quarterback
who just sits there and smiles at State of the Union addresses and has to be the guy that looks like he's supporting the president. And then, you know, be there in case the first string quarterback ever gets injured for some reason.
Well, they're also in this race. I mean, our Judge Gray did a tremendous amount of traveling going around to, you know, many of the states around the country, doing campaign stops, doing media appearances. And it is a campaigning job, and I want somebody in that position that has campaigned before. You know, Gary has said that he made 90% of what he did last time was stupid, and he's not going to do it again, and he's going to focus on the 10% that worked. And you want somebody who has experience at winning elections and campaigning running for office, you know, and I don't know the campaigning experience of the other campaigns, but I do know that these guys are experienced at campaigning, and this is about conditioning people to pull the lever for a libertarian. And what is the average voter going to mean? What will make them the most comfortable in pushing the button for an L? And beginning that climb into the rabbit hole in which we're all in, to where they end up having the philosophy of Daryl Perry. You know, it isn't about absolute purity when you're trying to select a presidential candidate or any candidate in the Libertarian Party. Purity is for podcasters. It is not it is not for candidates. And okay. Candidates are out there trying to condition people to break out of the mindset of the two-party system. And it is a much easier step for voters to take that leap to two people who have been a part of the system and have been successful in that system. And yeah, that makes us feel uncomfortable because we're trying to get out of the system, but you're trying to pull people in when you're selecting a candidate. So, you know, I look at political choices very pragmatically. I don't look at it from a pure, you know, if Gary Johnson were someone that were too, you know, if he had the beliefs of Cruz, for instance, I wouldn't push the button. I wouldn't vote for him. You know, I couldn't do it. If he, you know, Bernie Sanders, Donald Trump, I can't vote for those people. They're too far out of the bounds of my principles. You know, Gary Johnson and I do not agree on everything. We're about 90% there, so I will vote for the guy. But I'm not going to crucify him over the 10%. And, well, let's say we're 80%, 75% together. Is he going to give us a better shot at winning voters to the Libertarian movement, to the Libertarian Party? I think so. So, but I will say, I did like Larry Sharp. And if Larry Sharp were the guy or Alicia Dern were the woman, I would be okay with it, you know, because I see what Brett is saying about Larry Sharp, having watched the vice presidential debate, which you can see at WeAreLibertarians.com. He does have a different appeal. Mm-hmm. He's very well spoken. He's very knowledgeable, very thoughtful. And I don't think that he would be handicapping the Johnson campaign. I just don't think that it would be nearly as appealing to the media, to the average voter, as William Weld would be. So those are just my two cents.
I don't know anything about Larry Sharp, but if you're going to, you know, in closing, if two ninjas are going to battle and your guy in the fight is really skilled with the nunchucks, and then at the last minute, you steal those nunchucks and give him a bo staff and tell him to go out there and win. You know what I mean? Like, his lack of comfort with that weapon is probably going to cost him something. And I think that if William Weld or Bill Weld is what makes Gary Johnson feel the best equipped, then we have to support that. Even if Larry Sharp is a really, really viable guy and has a lot of pros to him, you know, I think we have to give Gary his weapon.
Yep. All right, thank you for joining us. A big thanks to Christy Avery, our only super fan. She took like 1,200, 1,500 flyers down to Orlando for us, passed them out. You know, if you're down at the convention and you saw one of the flyers, she was the one that did it. So if you know Christy, if you see her, give her a big thanks. Stop by the Advocates booth, say hi to Chloe. Chloe has, she needs the moral support. She has been ogled three ways to Sunday, being one of the only females there this weekend. being an attractive female in a convention space with libertarians and Comic-Con, the poor girl is having a rough time. So stop by and say hi to her. Give her a shout-out if you listen to the podcast. Say what's up. And my buddy Drew, who just said he wanted to meet up, asked if I was there. I've never met Drew, but Drew sent an email saying I want to meet. I wish I could have gone. I wish I could have gotten down there to say hi to people like Drew, but I just couldn't swing it. But thanks for joining us. Thanks for giving us some of your Uber time, Joe. Hopefully you can make up the money. So appreciate
we'll make
it.
The money. Do we get to do the closing tagline that you and Greg usually do?
Absolutely. So as always, we promise
to do better next time.